My approach to trying to understand a little more of enlightenment is using mathematics as an analogy, but a little different from Tom's. Just to give you a couple of examples, I was reading in mystical literature, and I would come across sentences similar to, like, the absolute can be represented symbolically by a circle whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. And to me, that seemed like a contradiction. And then I'd run into other statements like, we are all the same in Brahman, and yet we're all different, which again seemed like a contradiction. And as you read a lot of mystical literature, including that of Franklin's, you'll find seemingly contradictions, more or less paradoxes. So in order to try to get a better understanding, I resorted to math. And through some suggestions by Franklin, I did a little studying on math called transfinite math that was developed by Cantor. And I just want to bring out a couple of very simple concepts that I feel help understand better the mystic statements by the Buddhas or the Shankaras or, you know, the wolves, etc., that appear to be contradictory. Where are they coming from? What is the state of enlightenment that they seem to be operating from? And why is it that we, in our normal state of consciousness, have a difficulty in understanding it? Well, with the statement that I made about the circle, the only way you can resolve that is if you start working with the unbounded, with the non-finite, in other words, the infinite. And to give you just some ideas, when you work with the infinite, you start coming up with different conclusions in math than you would if you work with the finite. And it turns out when you, again, prefixing some of the statements, what is the difference between nirvana and paranirvana? So with the analogy I'm going to use in transfinite, I think I can point to some of the significance. But unfortunately, I have to work a little with numbers first to convey the idea. If you're going to compare infinites or different types of infinities, you use the same concept as if you're going to compare any set of numbers, whether they're finite or infinite. If you have the numbers 1, 2, 3, and another set of numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, obviously the set of numbers that contain the 4 is greater. And you use that same concept for infinity. But let me give you an illustration. We'll use integers. Now, if you use all the positive integers, 0, 1, 2, 3, every integer out to infinity, you have a set of all the integers that exist. If you produce a second set of the even integers, like 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, you notice all of the odd integers obviously is missing from that set. Now, this is an infinite set, not a finite set. So the question is, which set has the greatest number of components? And it turns out, since it's an infinite set, they're identical. And the way you come up with that, you get a one-to-one correspondence in the sets. And the way you do that is the even sets, if you take the odd sets, 1, 2, 3, and just double it, you'll find out then you generate the even set. So in transfinite numbers, the infinity, the order infinity, is the same. Or the strength of an infinity is the same. Now, if you're working with finite numbers, you cannot come up with that conclusion. So that is the smallest set of infinity that we know, and it's represented in math by Aleph sub null. But it's an infinite set. There's another set of infinities we work with every day. It's called the real numbers. Like the square roots of 2, contains the rational numbers. It is in an order of infinity greater than that of the integers. And if you take, for example, E, a transcendental number, which is a non-repeating decimal, it is contained in the set of real numbers. It's not contained in the set of integers. So we have a strength, a stronger order of infinity. What that means is in the stronger infinity represented mathematically as aleph sub 1, you have numbers there that you do not have in the first set. But in both cases, we're working with infinity. You start running into so-called paradoxes with infinity. If you take a line 1 inch long, or if you take a line 1 mile long, you find out there are the same number of points in each. And you can prove that by every point that you can find on a line 1 mile long, you'll find a corresponding point on a line 1 inch long. You have a one-to-one correspondence. So the order of infinity of the lines are the same. Now, this can begin to give you an idea when people, the mystics, start talking about their experience in the infinite realm. You can begin to understand why it is so difficult to understand some of their conclusions. Because what they say is not wholly false. It is what we're inferring from their statements, from our experience in this world, that is causing the error in the judgment. Some of the, in the finite world, we know if you take a circle and divide it, that the sum of the part will equal the whole. In the infinite realm, that is not true. The sum of the parts equal the whole. And the example I gave with the even integers, and all the integers indicate that. So when you start working with the infinite realm, you do have to take into consideration, you're going to come up with seemingly paradoxes or contradictions. And you can resolve these contradictions or paradoxes by shifting your base of reference to the infinite world. Now, some interesting things, I'll just mention just a couple of properties of infinite numbers that might shed light on the mystical. If you have an infinite number of numbers, like the integers, and you add another infinite set of numbers, your infinity or your order infinity does not change. If you have an infinite set of numbers and you multiply by another infinite set of numbers, your order of infinity remains the same. It's still infinite. However, if you have a lower order of infinity and you add it to a higher order infinity, then you end up with the higher order of infinity. Now, in my analogy, what I make as an analogy to try to better understand what's happening is the manifestation, this universe that we live in, I represent through analogy as a finite universe, finite world. Nirvana, which we have often read about, I use the symbolism or analogy, it's aleph sub 1. Para-nirvana, or similar, consciousness without an object, or consciousness without a subject, I represent as aleph sub 1, a higher order infinity. So that someone who has attained a state such as para-nirvana, or a consciousness without an object, or without a subject, is in a much higher realm, an infinity, a stronger order of infinity, represented by aleph sub 1, than someone who has reached nirvana. But someone who has reached nirvana, which is still an infinite state, is far better than this world we're living on. Franklin and other mystics have mentioned that there are mountains beyond mountains beyond mountains. And in Cantor's math of transfinite numbers, there are an infinite number of infinite sets. In other words, we go from aleph sub 0, the lowest order of infinity we know, to aleph sub infinity. Now, so far, in this manifestation, all that we found, all they know about, as far as the strengths of infinity, is three orders. Aleph sub null is the order of infinities of all integers. Next higher order of infinity is aleph sub 1, represented by the real numbers, including the transcendental numbers. But transcending all of that is aleph sub 2, which which is the quantity of all the geometric shapes that they know, that you can conceive of. It's even greater than the set of real numbers. So if you sort of grab onto the concept of infinite, I think too, as you listen a little to Franklin's works, or to Buddha's, or whoever, Sri Aurobindo, whoever is a master, and realize they're talking from an infinite realm, and I think a lot of the misunderstandings might be clarified.